It's On Second Thought. I'm Celeste Headlee. From its earliest days as a nation, the U.S. has struggled with a problem that we can't seem to solve. Racism. It's at the foundation of many of our institutional policies. And Ibram Kendi chronicles the evolution of racial ideas in his book, Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. The book recently won the National Book Award for Nonfiction. And Ibram will speak tonight at the Atlanta History Center. But first, joins me now by Skype from his home in Florida. Good morning to you.
Good morning, Celeste. How are you?
I'm doing well. It's really a pleasure to talk to you because this book, it's very difficult to read a book these days on racism that says new things, but you seem to do it all the way through the whole book. And let's start with the first, the most essential thing, which is your use of racial ideas instead of saying it's a history of racism. What's the difference?
Well, I wanted to distinguish between the ideology of racism. So somebody thinking, for instance, that Black people are lazy, and the praxis of racism, or the practice, which is somebody discriminating, let's say, against a Black worker. And I wanted to sort of show the development of these ideas over the course of American history and the way they interacted with these policies and with these forms of discrimination. And so people can sort of see how their own ideas have impacted their behavior or vice versa.
It's not a comfortable book, though, if you are going to find, let's say that you're a liberal-minded African-American and you are going to this book to see all of your ideas about racism confirmed, you won't find comfort here because you're not just talking about white racism in this book. You also take on racial ideas held by people of color. Why do that? Do you feel as though it's necessary to include everybody?
Well, I did it because it's part of the history. And, you know, as a scholar, as an historian, I wanted to tell the complete story. And ideas are ideas. And so anybody can hold ideas that Black people are criminals, that we should fear Black people. And even Black people hold those ideas, even though there's no evidence that supports it. And so I wanted to chronicle, so everyone who believes that there's something wrong with Black people could recognize that those ideas are not only racist ideas, but those ideas are false.
Let's examine at least one of those sort of category of racist ideas among African Americans. And you talk in there about the civil rights movement and this idea that if whites see Blacks uplifting themselves, it'll improve the overall opinion of the race. The idea of the good Black. Right? That you see as a racist idea that was held by a lot of African Americans during the 1960s and 70s. Why did that idea arise and why did it take hold?
Well, white abolitionists in the 1790s started seeing the emergence of free Blacks, and they basically started lecturing those free Blacks that if they uplift themselves and defy stereotypes, then they will persuade away the racist ideas of whites. And a certain segment of Black America took hold of that strategy and has passed it on till this day. The reason why it's a racist idea is very simple, because it suggests that Black people are responsible for the racist ideas that white people have about them. And to suggest that Black people are responsible for the racist ideas whites have is to suggest that there's some truth in notions of Black inferiority. And to believe there's some truth in notions of Black inferiority is to hold racist ideas.
So what is the difference then? And I ask you all these questions. The book answers them all and answers them really readably. But what is the difference between a racial idea and discrimination?
So, you know, going back to the initial example, if I, as a small business owner, have a job opening and a Black person comes in to apply, and I think that that Black person is lazy merely because of the color of their skin, that's a racist idea. But then let's say that person applies and I hire them because I don't want to be sued. I'm not engaging in a racist practice, but other business owners may decide not to hire that person because of the color of their skin. That's a racist policy, or that's racial discrimination.
Okay, so let's go back then to what drove you to write this book. And I want to play you a comment. One of our producers went to the National Center for Civil and Human Rights here in Atlanta and asked people who were there on their thoughts on racism. So here is one Atlanta resident who blames technology for it.
My name is Saida Ogbemudia. I am 24 years old. To me, racism is, it's not growing. It's always been there, and it's just being more and more exposed with the addition of social media. And I mean, just read the YouTube section. I mean, the comments in the YouTube section, it's more and more people. They're coming out of the woodworks because they feel more bold with technology.
And you write in your preface, I think it was, that you were driven to write this book because of all of the killings, the police involved shootings and killings. Here she is saying that it sounds like what she's saying is that racism is as bad as it ever has ever been. We're just seeing more of it. What do you make of that?
So, you know, that's something that I had to think about as I was writing this history. And I came to realize that there has been racial progress over the course of American history, but there's been a simultaneous progression of racism. And I chronicled both. And so American history has both histories happening simultaneously.
Then let's hear one more comment that was gathered during at the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. This is Nia Daniel, who is an Atlanta-based filmmaker. And here she is with her thoughts of, the origins.
When you look at the term race, it denotes a competition. And so when you're born and you're put in a particular race, that automatically puts you in on a team that has to win. So we're automatically pitted against one another. So I feel like if we're going to wipe out racism, we have to wipe out the term race. We're a people. We're not just different races trying to compete to win.
And you actually start tracing the history of racial ideas in America back to Europe. And what do we know about the very beginnings of racist ideas?
So, yeah, the beginning of racist ideas was in 15th century Portugal. The Portuguese were the first nation, European nation to start exclusively slave trading in African people. And because they started exclusively slave trading in African people, they needed a justification, specifically before the Pope. And that justification became racist ideas. These people were beasts, these people were uncivil, and we're going to civilize them.
And then as we're walking through your book, you have separated it with tour guides. Like you focused on certain people: Cotton Mather, Thomas Jefferson, William Lloyd Garrison, W.E.B. Du Bois, and then finally Angela Davis, to sort of walk us through this history. And why do we begin with Cotton Mather?
Well, first and foremost, Cotton Mather was the most influential theologian and preacher in early America, or I should say colonial America. He was a pastor at the North Church, which was the most prestigious church in New England. And first and foremost, he was a theologian, and science was theology, and theology was science in the 1600s and early 1700s. And so first, you know, he was at the forefront of scientific ideas as a theologian. And then secondly, he was in the midst of this debate over whether Black people could become Christian. And so you had slave owners saying that no, they were too beasts, they were too barbaric to become Christians. And then you had preachers like Cotton Mather saying, no, they actually can become Christians. But the way he went about it was to say that though our bodies may be unequal, in other words, Black bodies are unequal and should be enslaved, our souls are equal. And that if Black people become Christians, their souls will become white.
And then what does that mean? Because, I mean, imagine that people are looking would look down the table of contents in your book and say, wait, where's Frederick Douglass? Where's Martin Luther King Jr.? Why does Cotton Mather then become that idea, then become pivotal?
Well, he was in the midst of the pivotal debate, right? And that debate over whether Black people could become Christian. And so that was a very pivotal debate during his time period. And it really created this division between racist ideas. One group saying that Black people were permanently inferior and could not become human, because to become human was to become Christian. And then there were Cotton Mather who were saying, no, they can become, you know, they are inferior right now, but they have the capacity to rise and become civilized. And, you know, later in the book, I do talk about Frederick Douglass and his racist ideas. I do talk about King when he suggested that God is white. And so, you know, but during Cotton Mather's time period, you know, he was this pivotal force in the debate between racist ideas.
We're speaking with Ibram Kendi. He's author of the book Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. And he's speaking tonight at the Atlanta History Center. Now, Cotton Mather, that idea of whether or not African-Americans could become Christian leads us almost directly to Thomas Jefferson and the founding of the country. So what is built into, I guess, our founding documents that relates to racist ideas? How did that become part of our very creation?
Well, I mean, first and foremost, of course, you had many of the writers of the founding documents were slave owners. And many of the slave owners in America, in colonial America, and then ultimately the United States, were defending slavery through racist ideas, saying that Black people should be enslaved because they're so uncivilized, or because they were cursed, they're descendants of Ham and they were cursed, or whatever idea that suggested that they should be enslaved. And so, but then the actual Constitution itself, of course, many people are familiar with the Three-Fifths Clause, in which for population purposes, enslaved Africans could be part of the population in the South. But the way that sort of operated was you had one group of people that stated that Black people were permanently three-fifths in terms of inferior to those five-fifths white humans. And then you had another group that would say that, yes, Black people are three-fifths right now, but we have the capacity to civilize them. And that was really the heart of the debate. And that has been the heart of the debate about racist ideas throughout the course of American history.
So I want to play you a comment from Kathleen Cleaver, who's now a lecturer at Emory University, but she was a member of the original Black Panther Party. And what she's talking about is, yes, how much progress has been made, but also how slow it has gone. Take a listen.
We attracted a lot of very, very intense people to fight for our freedom. The 14th Amendment was passed at the end of the Civil War and gave Black people the right to vote. In the 60s, we're having a voting rights movement, okay? So America is very slow about recognizing what Blacks are entitled to, and particularly in the South, they want to undo and unroll and push back.
So this is one of the threads throughout your book is the slow progress. Why is it so slow? What holds back the fight against racist ideas?
Well, because racist ideas, or I should say racist policies, benefit people. And so racist ideas, I show, have long been put to use to defend racist policy. So I just talked about how the founding, some of the founding fathers were slave owners and how they deployed racist ideas to defend slavery. Well, slavery was very beneficial for them economically. They, you know, a lot of people became very rich as a result of this institution. And so for those people, they did not want to give up this institution, right? They had to go to war, right, in order to end slavery, because slavery was so economically viable. And there have been many other policies in American history, racist policies, that have been very economically or even politically or even culturally viable for people. And so that's why they have not wanted to give them up.
Okay, so one of the I'm going to play a comment from a speech that you actually took issue with, and this is our current president, Barack Obama. But this one is from March of 2008, and he delivered what was considered a major speech about race in America. And here's the section that you refer to in your book.
To wish away the resentments of white Americans, to label them as misguided or even racist without recognizing they are grounded in legitimate concerns, this too widens the racial divide and blocks the path to understanding. This is where we are right now. It's a racial stalemate we've been stuck in for years.
What problem do you have with that?
So I'm not really sure exactly what he's talking about, but what I suspect he was talking about was that basically you have white Americans saying that there are things wrong with Black people. And, you know, why is it? Because essentially you have a scenario in which you have these racial disparities and inequities. And there's only two causes of a racial disparity. Either there's something wrong with Black people or there's racial discrimination. And you have Black people fighting against racial discrimination. And then you have some white people saying, well, no, that's not the real problem. The real problem is what's wrong with Black people, which to me are racist ideas. And so I talk about the ways in which those racist ideas are just not true and have been usually disproven. And so I think that that's what he's referring to, and that's why I had a problem with it.
I'm speaking with Ibram Kendi. He's author of the book Stamped from the Beginning, The Definitive History of Racist Ideas in America. And he'll speak about that at the Atlanta History Center at 8 o'clock. And I also wanted to say congratulations because you just won a National Book Award.
Yeah, it's quite exciting. But at the same time, it's kind of unfortunate because I know one of the reasons why, you know, the book won is because race and racism is still such a prevailing issue in our society, and people are searching for ways to understand what this nation is facing.
Yeah.
But more importantly, people are searching for ways, hopefully, to eliminate this problem.
And move forward. Ibram Kendi, thank you so much. And we wanted to say thank you to Atlanta teenager Jason Crichton for gathering the responses that you heard from the National Center for Civil and Human Rights. Jason's a reporter for Vox Teen Communication. Thank you so much, Ibram.
All right. Thank you, Celeste.